What's up, everybody? Before we start this episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, I want to do the big giveaway for the month of April, even though we're now into May, but this is for the advanced copy of our friend Mir's book, The Houdini Club, The Epic Journey and Daring Escapes of the First Army Rangers. So I have all of our names in a bin here. We're going to give it a shaky, shake, 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 shake. I'm going to pull out a name here. And the winner is Mr. Connor Trent. Congratulations, sir. Connor Trent, you are the winner of the April giveaway of the Houdini Club. I will reach out to you on Patreon. Please log in and check your messages. I'll get your address and we'll get this book and some stickers sent out your way. Congratulations. And a reminder, if you guys wanted the opportunity to win on the next Patreon giveaway, please head over to whatsthescuttlebutt.com, whatsinyourhead.com, or d-410.com. Click on the Patreon link, sign up, and subscribe. All you have to do is be an active subscriber to be eligible for the next giveaway. Thank you guys so much. On with the show. So as somebody who's been carrying a firearm for over 13 years daily, one of the biggest inconveniences is when you come home, you need to take your firearm off of yourself and put it somewhere safe, somewhere secure, especially if you have kids. Now, I know most of us are responsible. We have a gun safe somewhere, but let's be honest. Usually these gun safes are big, they're bulky, they're kind of out of the way because they're a bit of an eyesore. Your wife doesn't want them where everybody can see them. So sometimes they're in your closet, behind some clothes, sometimes they're in the garage, sometimes they're in the mudroom. And let's be honest, taking your firearm out and walking to those locations to secure it is a pain in the butt, but you have to be a responsible firearm owner, especially if you have kids in the house. That's why you need to get yourself a StopBox Pro portable gun safe. You can make it non-portable, you can drill some holes in it, mount it to a place of convenience in your house, but it requires no batteries and no electricity. You simply come in your house, walk up to your safe, choose your finger button combinations, open a safe, remove your firearm from your person, put it in the safe. If you close your safe, just that easy, it's secure. So do yourself a favor, head over to StopBoxUSA.com/D410 and get all the information today on your StopBox Pro. When seconds count, trust the only non-fail firearm storage box, StopBox Pro, at StopBoxUSA.com/D410.
Digital 410 Media proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Don Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Dennis Blocker.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II-based podcast, and we are back here for another wonderful episode. Joining me tonight, as always, Mr. Dennis Blocker. Dennis, what's going on in your world, fella?
Oh, just, working on the book, working at my employment, and had a great time with Jeff this past weekend at the Wings Over Texas, the Fiesta event here in San Antonio at Stinson Field.
How was that?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. A lot of turnout, very large turnout. This is their second one. And, Jeff was there and he's always got, you know, great display and he brought his Jeep. And we had some guys that he's been talking with that showed up dressed up as Tuskegee Airmen.
Nice.
They looked sharp. Yeah, it was awesome. So they took some great pics with some Texan, you know, the trainer aircraft. Mm-hmm. There was a couple of them there, and so they were able to get in the cockpits and, you know, do their thing, and huge crowd of people gathering around to take a look. And I had some really great pictures with Jeff and one of his friends, an active duty colonel. Yeah, and
good friend to have.
Yeah, for sure. And these Tuskegee Airmen guys, and they're kind of hunched down in front of this aircraft, this Texan, and they're putting their hands like they're describing diving on.
Yeah,
you know, it was turned out great. You just hear the cameras, you know, behind you, everybody gathering up and taking pictures, and it's cool.
Very I think cool. My next event will be on June 6th, June 7th. Obviously D-Day, but more locally, I think we are going to have a farewell for another one of our reenactors who passed away. Now, his name was Jerry English. He was probably in his early 70s. He'd been participating in the community for a while. I believe he was a gym coach or some sort of teacher at a high school. I know he was beloved in his community to the point where the announcer's box at the local high school was called Jerry English. It was dedicated to him, but one of the nicest guys. I mean, when I started 12 years ago, obviously he was, you know, late 50s, early 60s. And so he's always the nicest guy. Drove a Jeep, been around for years, but passed away. And so I think we here in the Florida reenacting community are going to bid a farewell to him on the in the Zephyr Hills event. I just picked up, I've been looking at him for a while. At the Front has been making flannel uniform shirts. They look just like the wool, but they're flannel. For obviously, because as you can attest to being in Texas, it's hot, damn hot. And so the flannel has the appearance, and I'll be honest with you, I'm looking at it now. I haven't put any patches on it yet, but it looks like the wool. Yeah. And I'll be honest with you, there's a lot of guys in Florida who are young enough or their bodies are small enough that they can, their bodies can accommodate original shirts. And my wool uniforms don't look so much like the original shirts as theirs do. And I'll tell you what, I think this flannel almost looks more like the original wool shirts than the modern day wool shirts do. Because like my modern wools are like, they're kind of thick. And to me, this flannel looks more like the original wool type.
Where'd you pick that up at?
At the Front, same place we were talking about the Navy uniforms. And this one was on sale. I got the NCO version because obviously I do second lieutenant. That's why it has the shoulder parts on it. But yeah, so I put it on a mannequin to get the wrinkles out. I got to sew my Ranger Division on there, and I got new butter bars. And then I think this will be the first time I've worn an actual full wool uniform, even though that's flannel. Because all the other impressions I've done, just because it's Florida, I usually wear the HBT pants with the flannel shirt, kind of do the mid-war impression. But since this is D-Day, I'm actually going to have on the flannel pants with the wool pants with the shirt and the M41 jacket, the whole nine yards. And so that'll be in June. And then that's kind of it for Florida. We flip-flop, right? Texas is the same way. Up in Ohio, Tennessee, you know, you get most of y'all's impressions are in the spring, summertime, and fall. You know, maybe more fall and spring. But down here in Florida, we try to do it in the wintertime because it's only a cool 80 degrees instead of 120. So,
right, yeah, exactly.
The first event I ever did was down in Naples about 13 years ago. And I was doing Marine Corps. I haven't done an Army impression yet. My first impression was Marine Corps. And no one was doing Marine Corps yet. The Pacific hadn't hit the heights that it had hit. It hadn't quite blown up yet. Marine Corps uniforms weren't super available. And so, like, I was the only Marine at this event. And I met a guy named John Thompson, sadly, who passed away a couple months back, too. But he did first infantry and let me fall on his guys. But I said, it was in a summer event. I'm the only Marine down there in my nice HBTs. You had all these guys doing airborne impressions and D-Day impressions, and it's hotter than hell. And they're all pouring water on their helmets, trying to cool them down from the hot sun. But I have the HBT cover on mine, so my helmet wasn't getting as hot. Those guys are like hiding in their tents, trying to get out of the direct sunlight because they're wearing the wool and all that. And I'm doing my Marine impression. So my impression was physically cooler than their Eastern impression because of all the wool and heavy garb. So that is the nice thing about doing Pacific and wearing HBT trousers. And so, yep, I got that coming up here shortly, and I'm looking forward to that. It's been a while. I don't think I've done any events since November. So it's just been hectic around here. But anyhow, we just want to remind everybody, we said we're going to do it at the end of April. Technically, there's two more days after the recording, so it's a giveaway for April. We're going to give the book actually away on the first episode of May, which technically will give you an extra week to sign up. So if you guys haven't done so, head over to WTSPWorldWar2.com or D-410.com. Click on the Patreon link or simply look for D410 Media on Patreon. Sign up to any of our tiers. We're going to give away the last remaining copy we have of the advanced, not for resale, copy of Mir's book, The Houdini Club. That was a great interview. That interview, by the way, is blowing up. The video interview is blowing up on YouTube. Some of the highest video views we've had on one of our videos in a while. But you guys want this awesome book, just go sign up and subscribe, any one of the tiers. And we don't bring it up a lot. I've decided I need to make some commercials. Dennis is wearing one right now. We do have shirts. you know, we're really bad about self-promotion here. we don't beat people over the heads with saying, hey, buy Dennis's books, buy our shirts. We're usually promoting other people's stuff, which is great, but we do have books. You know, you can reach out to Dennis on his Instagram page or send us an email to mail@wtspworldwar2.com if you want an autographed version of Dennis's book, or you can get on Amazon through the link on our website, or go to the merch link on our website. We have the WTSP shirt that Dennis is wearing there. We have the Red Ball shirt. We have a bunch of shirts, hooded sweatshirts, sock hats, windbreakers. Jeff loves the coffee mugs. All that stuff is available. WTSPWorldWar2.com. And while you're also there, click on the YouTube link or head over to YouTube.com. Look for D410 Media and sign up and subscribe. And that is all the ways to help us here at the show to keep the channel going. Now that we got all that uncomfortable stuff out of the way, Dennis, you got some update, I guess, and you've had a lot of more projects going on. What's going on, fella?
Yeah, I'm just working on my next book about the gunboats at Iwo Jima, the February 17th, 1945 recon mission with the underwater demolition teams. I have, you know, resurrected a bunch of the documents and binders and pictures and everything that I had in totes forever. The original plan years ago was to write that story, that book, right off the bat. When I wrapped up all of the then research on it back in 2016, but, you know, life happens. And then my dad wanted to write his memoirs of his time in Iraq and Afghanistan with War Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
During 05, 06 in Iraq, and then 2010, 2011 in Afghanistan. So I helped him with that, and we co-wrote those books together. Ended up being two books, and they're just tremendous experience being able to do that with my dad. And
absolutely,
computers side by side, both Mac desktops. So he had the ironic capability of airdropping chapters to me as we were typing away. And that was a great experience. And there's a lot of stuff on YouTube where we talk about those times. And then that kind of led me to think, man, I should write my book, my story about my time working in emergency medicine and battles with PTSD and whatnot.
Sure.
And I wrote my book Clear. And then I wanted to get at least get a my first book on a short story series. I've always wanted to do a short story series on World War II. Kind of cool things that, you know, and we've talked about it before, that maybe there's not enough that you could do a, you know, 300 page book, but something that is very interesting that people would find compelling, and that maybe is a part of the World War II history that is a little bit maybe unknown. And so I started that series a couple months ago, the Valor Vault series. Props to Jeff on giving me the idea and the title. And of course that first book was Banzai Cliff, Desperation's Edge.
And so your next book is the follow-up or number two in that series, correct?
Well, that was what I was thinking originally. And I already have book two, three, four research started on those different topics. Recently moving, I came across all of my research on the gunboats. Another reason that I waited a little bit was that I did The Heart of Hell with Mitch back in 2016. And so that story was of my grandfather's gunboat on this mission. But when I first did all the research between 2002 and 2016, and I interviewed over 100 World War II veterans during that time period, a lot more than 100,
mm-hmm.
The idea was to tell the story of the entire group. So that's always been on my heart. And I did interview the guys to do that. So I picked that up, and I've been hitting that very hard the last several months. I've got a Excel spreadsheet that has the left column is the names of the ships or the units. For instance, UDT 12, 13, 14, 15. So they each have their own entry. Then all the LCI gunboats, all the destroyers are listed there. All of the destroyer escorts, which were command ships for each individual UDT team. Also the cruisers, battleships, minesweepers, anybody who was there on the 17th for this mission, they have an entry on the column on the left side going down. And then it was a matter of getting the action report and the deck log. And then for each one for the 17th, And then just starting at the top, we ship and entering in. So that if you can imagine on the left column is the name of the ship, then I've tossed across the top, each column represents 5 minutes of time. And so anytime that something is mentioned, for instance, on the USS Bates that happens there, that they put in their log, or, and fortunately, some of these ships even kept radio traffic logs.
Wow.
And yeah. So that's very interesting. And so then I would plug in, those entries into the ships. And that's,
how does that radio traffic log read? Is it stuff you, or do you kind of interpret it a little bit for the ease of the consumption of the reader, or is it pretty much easily understandable?
Yeah, surprisingly, and very understandable. The lot like open traffic, like not code words, of course, for ships, but
sure,
you know, Swami 3 requesting direct fire on gun emplacement 193A. And so then that, but I also have the map, right? I have the map with all the sectors, so I can see exactly where they're wanting to place fire, because LCI 441 reports receiving heavy artillery fire from cliffs.
You know, I don't know if anybody would know this answer. I'm sure somebody would know this answer. I don't know this answer. I wonder if you would. It would strike me as odd that they wouldn't have a shorthand, right? When the amount of messages being relayed, unless they did, and then somebody transcribed that back at headquarters for the official documentation, did they have any sort of shorthand, or were these guys just writing us out longhand as fast as their pencil could scribe?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's written in a way that you know that it was taken down real time, and it wasn't, they didn't have time with, because then the 19th happens and the invasion, there's no time to go back and make clean up the entries.
Well, so, I just didn't know if maybe if there was a uniform code of shorthand and then they sent it back, you know, if it was transcribed at a later date.
These entries are recorded faithfully the way that it was said.
That's
over
cool.
The radio. Yeah. So a lot of times there's even slang in